You're listening to the Winsight Podcast Network.
Take your industry insights to the next level by becoming a restaurant business subscriber. Go to restaurantbusinessonline.com, click on the blue subscribe button in the upper right-hand corner, enter promo code PODCAST23, that's PODCAST23, to get your first month of RB Basic for free. After promo period, current rates apply. Now, please enjoy this episode of A Deeper Dive.
What is the state of the labor market? Hello, this is Jonathan Mays, editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. And in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I speak with Brian Miller, the CEO of management recruiting firm Patrice & Associates. Miller works with hospitality companies to recruit executives and managers. We talk a lot about the labor market, which has been resilient, surprisingly so, at least if you ask economists. We talk about why that market has been so resilient and what impact that could have on restaurants' ability to hire and retain workers going forward. Restaurants have seen improvement in the labor markets this year, though it remains tight. We discuss those issues on the podcast. We also talk about the best strategies for retaining workers. Most companies have been working harder to retain their top managers and other talent, and we explain why. But we also talk about the best strategies for retention. Hint, it's not that hard. We're talking labor on this week's A Deeper Dive, so please have a listen. All right, I am here with Brian Miller. Brian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jonathan. Excited to be here.
All right, so tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, my name is Brian Miller. I'm the CEO of Patrice & Associates. We're the largest hospitality, management, and executive recruiting firm in North America. We have about 180 locations in the U.S. and Canada.
So how do you see things right now in terms of the labor market when it comes to restaurants and bars?
Well, obviously, as we know, the labor numbers just came out today, and it is a little bit more moderate report than it's been recently. Mm-hmm. But overall, the labor market is still a tight labor market. And we know what happened before the pandemic, we know what happened during the pandemic, and we know what happened after the pandemic. It was a tight labor market before the pandemic. It's an even tighter labor market now, primarily because we had a lot of people who left the labor market during the pandemic. We have a declining birth rate in North America. All of those things have led to kind of where we are. So while the hiring isn't quite the pace that it was right after the pandemic in restaurants, when pretty much it was like going to the grocery store when you're hungry and companies were grabbing up people right and left and the kind of the salary charts went out the window, it's tend to moderate a little bit more right now. But as we saw from these recent unemployment numbers, there were still about 19,000 jobs that were added in the hospitality industry. So it's still a tight labor market. Companies, restaurants are still hiring, although they're being a little bit more picky about who they're bringing onto their roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably not the worst thing on the planet. So do you think, I mean, based on what you're saying, it sounds like, is it going to be a relatively tight market for restaurants, just sort of in perpetuity because of the way things have worked out? Or do you think it's going to get better at some point?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question, and I've spent a lot of time studying this. I think there are some underlying socio-demographic factors that have kind of brought us to where we are right now. As I said, you know, there was about 40% of the baby boomers who left the workforce during the pandemic and didn't return. Couple that with the declining birth rate, fertility rate. It doesn't matter whether we like it, don't like it, agree with it, disagree with it. That's the reality of where we are. I think this week, the government released the numbers that there is 1.5 job openings for every person that's out there. I don't see that getting dramatically better. Of course, there's always going to be peaks and valleys in the economy. Because that's the way the business cycle works. But I think we're likely to see in our focus a tighter labor market for the foreseeable future, which is going to be challenging for restaurants in terms of hiring. Again, you know, I think that we're seeing restaurants maybe hanging on to people a little bit longer than they have in the past for fear of not wanting to have to go through that cycle again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've seen, you know, I mean, in a lot of conversations that we're having with operators and what we heard on restaurant earnings this week, you know, a lot more, you know, say, confidence in the current labor market where, you know, they're more likely to be fully staffed, talk about wage rates easing, Still going up, but still, easing that way, and labor costs not quite the issue that they had early this year and certainly last year. That there is a lot more signs of confidence going forward.
I think that's going to be the case because, as I said, right after the pandemic, it was, my analogy is going to the grocery store on an empty stomach. I mean, companies really desperately needed people. Restaurants needed people. So they were hiring people and the salary charts kind of went out the window. But right now we're seeing wages moderate more and candidates, meaning the people that are applying for these jobs, can't demand quite the salaries that they were looking for before. So the wages are starting to come back into balance. There are still job openings and restaurants are still hiring. In fact, I got two companies that approached us today about wanting us to help them, but it is eased off somewhat. And so the labor market has stabilized somewhat. Again, this time of year, it tends to slow down a little bit because if restaurants haven't hired for the holidays, then they're kind of behind the eight ball. So by this point in the year, they've done most of the hiring to prepare for, these next, 4 to 6 weeks. And then generally it tends to pick up after the beginning of the year again.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you see differences? Like, is it easier to get certain types of employees into your restaurant than others? I mean, where is that at?
Well, most of the time, what we do is we work with management level candidates and above. So that would be, a manager all the way through into, executive placements and restaurants and accommodation. It seems to be a little bit more of a challenge on the hourly side. Yeah. That's where it continues to be a challenge for, restaurants to hire and not only hire, but to be able to retain people. Retention is a little bit better on the management side. So, you see a lot of trends in the restaurant industry right now. Even Forbes reported last year that you're seeing a lot more kiosks and technology enter the restaurant environment that can facilitate the ordering process. And we've seen a lot of that in the franchise QSR brands. They've been offering those types of touchscreen kiosks for a while. That helps somewhat with the hourly level employees. But even with a kiosk, there needs to be a manager that has to supervise the delivery of the food and the customer service and that type of thing as well. So for the most part, the pressure points continue to be more in the hourly side. Right after the pandemic, it was both management and hourly. Now that management has eased off a little bit, there's still pressure points in hiring hourly employees.
Why is that pressure eased on managers less than hourly employees? Because actually that's kind of the opposite of what I would think, because I know that managers tend to be in heavy demand. That's a very, very, very important position in the restaurant space.
It's an extremely important position, but also candidates are being a little bit more cautious as well about making a move in our current labor market. So, one of the things that we see on the rise, which is kind of unique to recruiting, is we see counteroffers on the rise. And a counteroffer is basically where somebody turns in their notice to go to work for somebody else. And the existing company says, we love you. We don't want you to go. Here's more money. Please stay. And we see more candidates accepting counteroffers because of not necessarily wanting to move in this type of, environment that we're in right now. There is a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. And also, again, because by this point in the year, most companies have hired managers that they need to get them through the holiday season. So we're seeing it kind of on both sides. We're seeing, the companies being a little bit more particular about who they bring on board. And we're seeing candidates being a little bit more cautious about jumping to another company in the current environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it does make sense. I mean, in my sense of things is that restaurants have really realized how important that manager position is. And over the past couple of years in particular, have really, really stepped up the efforts that they've made to keep really good managers. I mean, some of the things that we're seeing, some of the things in terms of that we've seen companies do, like take them on trips, we've seen some incentives such as help buying a house, things like that. I mean, the incentives that they're using to keep managers on staff has been pretty impressive.
Yeah, and we see that as well. I think, culture is a big thing, especially in restaurants. Core values are a big thing. You know, salary is one thing and everybody wants to have a competitive salary, but people don't always make a move for salary. They make a move, in a lot of cases, for culture and the type of organization that they feel values them and values their contribution. You know, there is such a thing as generational diversity in the workforce. And you see millennials and, you know, Gen Z and all those other types of individuals, you know, that type of thing is really important to them, Jonathan, the kind of culture, the environment that they have. And so I think restaurants and hospitality companies in general have kind of woken up to the fact that, you know, you can't just work people 50, 60 hours a week and, you know, expect that people are going to stay with you, that there has to be other things about the culture, the environment, the training, the support, the motivation, you know, the valuing the contribution that go and go a long way in terms of getting people to stick with you and grow their career with you. So I think restaurants and hotels have done a big job in stepping up the importance of why somebody would want to work there. You know, that's a challenge oftentimes because a lot of companies think, well, everybody just wants to work for us, right? But even in this tight labor market, even though there's not as many jobs available, there's still a lot of jobs available. Obviously, we hired 19,000 jobs last month. So that means that really good people are always going to have choices about where to go. So as a company, you have to make sure your core values, your culture, you have to describe your environment, why somebody would want to work there, and then you have to deliver on that. And I think you're right. And that's why I said at the beginning of the podcast that companies are tending to hang on to people a little bit longer because they don't want to go through that cycle of trying to find the right person and seeing if that's all going to work out.
Yeah, it's more expensive to hire somebody. I mean, it's just a pain. I mean, not only is it a pain, but it just costs you more to do that. You're gonna spend more eventually anyway. You might as well spend more now.
And there's a cost per hire, and then there's definitely a cost if you have a high turnover cost. You know, that hits your bottom line in a variety of ways as well. So, you know, obviously when companies do hire, one of the things they want to know from us is what is the tenure of this candidate, you know, and what accomplishments have they done? How, you know, what's helped them stand out? So when they do hire people, they want to see people that have, you know, a good track record and, you know, not somebody that's a job hopper, somebody that's going to stick around. So when restaurants find people that are really good people, somebody that they think they can career path with, we're seeing them hang on to people longer by doing some of the kinds of things that you were sharing with your listeners.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the most important things that a restaurant company needs to do to keep its best people?
Well, I think number one, it's about appreciation. It's about telling people you appreciate them. Mm-hmm. And that sounds so basic and it sounds so simple, but amazingly, a lot of supervisors, a lot of people don't do that. So telling employees that you value them is an important part of it. Things like, you know, senior management telling employees that they value them, they appreciate their contribution. I think opportunities for training, opportunities for career advancement, those types of things, you know, are important to people. And a lot of cases, it just comes down to having managers who know how to manage and who can lead a team of people and who can lead themselves as well. So these are all things that I think are super important, is making sure your managers and your leaders in your organization have good people skills. They can not only lead themselves, but they can lead other people as well. They're taught to value employees and provide positive reinforcement, perks, training, career advancement opportunities. Those are all things that people are looking for. As I said before, it's not just the money. You know, people don't make a move just for money. And sometimes when they do, they regret that, right? It's about the culture. It's about the environment. So it really comes down to appreciating. The companies that talk about their mission, their core values, the things that are important to them, that really strikes a chord with people. It's got to be more than just a poster on the wall. It's got to be how you manifest those things, how you live those things on a daily basis, how you treat the guests, how you treat the employees. All of those things, people want to join an organization that has a higher purpose. And that may sound interesting in a restaurant, but, you know, down to your mission, your core values, talking about those types of things, those are the things that get people excited about staying and growing with your brand.
Mm-hmm. So, you hit on a couple of key points. That appreciation thing is so important. So many companies talk about culture. I mean, honestly, I've had a lot of restaurant executives on this, on this podcast. And if I had a nickel for the number of times somebody said, hey, we have a good culture, or if I did an interview and I said, oh, yeah, we have a good culture. Well, what does that mean? First off, you know, the biggest thing I think that any employer, doesn't even matter. We could be talking about journalists for God's sakes. We could be talking about almost any industry on the planet. The best thing that you could do to foster a good culture, in my opinion, is to show your good workers some real appreciation and demonstrate, you know, hey, when you do really good work, we are going to show it off. And it's not just like we have an employee of the year program. I mean, that's nice and stuff like that. But just on a day-to-day basis, start appreciating people's good work. That's really important if they're very talented, because if they don't get that on a day-to-day basis, you know, then they start feeling underappreciated. They start feeling, you know, I'm not, you know, my employer, I do all this good work and no, my employer doesn't say a damn word about it, things like that. That is so vital. It's not even funny.
It's critical, and it's one of the skills that a lot of managers lack, unfortunately. You know, as humans, we tend to point out things that people do wrong instead of pointing out things that people do right. And I read an interesting study that made an impact on me a few years ago that said that it takes, you know, 7 positive comments to erase 1 negative comment. And, you know, that doesn't mean that you don't correct employees when they're wrong, or you don't, you know, change behavior. You don't focus on changing behavior, but it's that point. You focus on the behavior, not the personality. So when you see employees doing something right, it's especially important at an hourly level in the restaurant that you compliment the employee. If you, you know, it's a basic principle of psychology. If you want behavior to continue, you reward that behavior. If you don't reward that behavior and you ignore it, it may continue, it may not. If you provide, you know, negative feedback on a behavior, then hopefully that's going to curtail it. But at the hourly level, at the server level, at the, you know, these types of positions, positive reinforcement makes all the difference in an employee saying, hey, I've got a really cool manager that I work for. You know, I really feel like they appreciate my work. They appreciate the environment that I'm in. Instead of just pointing out the things that I do wrong, they're telling me why I'm a valuable team member. So more education and training to managers on the importance of those types of, you know, leadership skills is critical if you want to retain your employees in this industry in particular.
Yeah. People don't quit jobs, they quit managers.
100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. You can have a really good company that has really good values and really good missions, and one bad manager in a location, you'll see it in the turnover ratio at that restaurant, even if it's a really good company. It really comes down to the local or the unit management.
Mm-hmm. So now you also mentioned that they have to live their values. And that seems, if anything, that's actually a lot harder to me, that you can't, you know, that's, you know, I mean, I, or maybe I'm wrong on that one, but that seems to be a little bit harder to try to accomplish, at least midstream.
Well, you know, as I said, a lot of companies will have a mission, they'll have core values, but they're just, it stays as a poster on the wall and it doesn't really mean much. You said you've had people on this podcast before that, you know, have commented about those types of things. So it really has to manifest itself in the daily activities. You know, in our company, we talk about our core values every time we get together. Anytime we have a meeting, the thing that we start off with is the core values of the company, which are respect, excellence, service, and teamwork. We talk about that every single meeting. And the only way that that becomes manifested in an organization is by the leaders of the organization talking about it all the time, because then people buy into it. In my company, our company isn't great because of me. It's great because of the people that perform the services, that work with the candidates, that work with the restaurants every single day, that have bought into that mission, and they show up differently when they talk to those customers. They don't show up like a typical recruiter that's just trying to sell them something. They show up as a staffing partner, somebody that really wants to understand their company, the culture of their company, who they are, and really find a great fit. So translate that to a restaurant. It can't just be the CEO talking about the core values. It's got to be everybody in the organization talking about the core values every day. You have a team meeting with, you know, your servers. You talk about the core values in the beginning. You know, before long, the more that you talk about these types of things, it's like attitude and behavior inexplicably intertwined. It's like the chicken or the egg, which comes first, you know, the attitude or the behavior. You know, so it's got to be translated down to the unit level and people talking about it. People will buy into that and buy into that kind of culture. But the only way that happens is if you talk about it all the time. It can't be just a poster on a wall. And then people begin to understand it, believe it, and then carry it out in their activities with the way they're providing guest services to the people that they're waiting on.
Yeah. I mean, I think some of the best companies that I know of in the restaurant space, you know, like Jersey Mike's and Chick-fil-A, they have a set of values that they live all the time. And it definitely filters through the organization. I mean, you can tell the way they do it. In-N-Out is another one where, you know, they have a certain set of values and how they operate. And they're pretty maniacal about that. And then it shows kind of on a day-to-day basis.
It's because they talk about it all the time. That's the only reason that they do. And you're right. Those are two great examples of that. But they talk about what those values mean. They give examples of what that means in terms of guest service and how they wait on the customers and those types of things. So the only reason, you see it when you go into those restaurants and how you're waited on. You can see it in the attitude of the employees. You know, there's an old book. It's called Hiring for Attitude and Training for Skills. Of course, we need some level of skills in the industry that we're in, but it really comes down to that. Is finding the right people, having the right people with the right seats in the bus, and then how they're led and how they're managed and what you talk about is important. And that will manifest itself in terms of, you know, how you execute the business model.
Yeah. And I always felt that one of the best strategies that sort of illustrates, you know, the culture and the values issues and things like that has always been Chick-fil-A being closed on Sundays. And, you know, it generally works to keep really good people on staff because they know that they're going to get a day off, which in the restaurant industry isn't. And, you know, if you're a manager in the restaurant industry, those things are not, they're pretty valuable. And, you know, it gets a lot of criticism and a lot of, you know, tends to be somewhat controversial. And it, certainly people are always like, why are you closed on Sundays? You're sacrificing sales. I can tell you from looking at the numbers. Chick-fil-A doesn't sacrifice a dime by closing on Sundays. Their numbers are through the roof. And so to me, that's always one of the best examples because it kind of gets to that, not only that values equation, but like, all right, we're going to be really employee friendly by making sure that there's this day off on the weekend.
And that's action. That's what it comes down to. It comes down to actions. And you're right. That's very unusual in the restaurant industry. You know, and that's one of the toughest things about our industry is people, you know, have to work 50, 60 hours a week. And, you know, it tends to burn people out. So a company like Chick-fil-A that gives them, you know, Sundays off, that's an incentive alone to work there. But it goes beyond just that. They're a great example of a company that makes their culture and their mission come alive. I mean, just in the language, the vernacular that they use when you go in there and you're waited on them by them, you know, it's my pleasure. I mean, those are things that happen as part of the training process that is built on a foundation of what the core values of the mission of the company are. And it's manifested in the training that they're provided to those employees. Not only the training, but the hiring, the type of people that they hire, you know, hiring for attitude, training for skills. But it's also part of that training, which is built on that foundation. But great example, Chick-fil-A, because, you know, that's a great opportunity to be able to have a day off like that with your family. And it certainly hasn't hurt their revenue.
No, not at all. In fact, I think it would hurt it if they actually opened on Sundays. I think long term, they would actually completely regret it. That's my view. So I want to, the last few minutes for the podcast, I want to ask you a little bit. I know you pay a lot of attention to the labor market in general. It's been very resilient, just overall, broadly speaking, far more resilient than any of us would have expected, given the way interest rates were and inflation was. I mean, everybody was expecting a recession a year ago. We haven't had one yet. And even the numbers that came out today, we're recording this on Friday. You know, the numbers that came out today showed, you know, that, you know, people are continue to hire. Does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me. Number one, because I'm at the ground level and I, you know, I'm talking to companies every day and we have, you know, hundreds of companies and jobs that people are giving us. So I kind of have a little bit of a catbird seat into it. But moreover, it hasn't really surprised me because of what I said to you before. It's a very tight labor market. You know, you can't, there's a, the where, I mean, I'm a baby boomer. Okay, so we'll talk about me. I'm a baby boomer. I'm a younger baby boomer, but I'm a baby boomer. You know, baby boomers are leaving the workforce. Okay, there's a declining birth rate in North America. All of this is leading to a very tight labor market. So while there will always be peaks and valleys in the economy, you know, if you have these underlying socio-demographic trends, those are things that are going to affect us for the future. Now, I don't have a crystal ball. What I can tell you is, even if we do get into a, you know, mild recession, that type of thing, I don't think that we're going to see, barring any unforeseen event like a pandemic or, you know, a global war or something that's way out in left field, you know, I don't think we're going to see massive layoffs in general. You might see it by industry sector because we just have this very tight labor force. It's defied economists' expectations. You know, every single month, the labor numbers come out and all these people who are a lot smarter than I am, you know, say, well, wait a minute. No, it's recession. I mean, you know, inflation. And I mean, you go to the grocery store, my bill's double what it was. I mean, so obviously those factors are there, but it hasn't led to a significant downturn in hiring. Part of that is because of the tighter labor market and what we're going to continue to see on a go forward basis. I think this report that came out this month is likely going to be well received by the central bank, because it is a more moderate report. Last month seemed to surprise people because it was super hot. This is a more moderate report. It's starting to cool off a little bit. That probably will make them continue with their pause on interest rates, and it will be received enthusiastically by the central bank. But in general, barring any global event, you know, we can't control what happens with wars. And if there's a spike in energy prices or things of that nature, those are all unforeseen circumstances. But I think the tighter labor pool is what has led to a more resilient labor market. And obviously, as I said, with the government reporting, there's 1.5 open jobs for every available worker. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why we are where we are.
Ryan, this was fantastic. Really appreciated you joining me on the podcast this week.
Thank you so much. It's always an opportunity. I very much appreciate, Jonathan, the opportunity to be here.
And that should do it for this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, which was edited, as always, by Kimmy Spoons-Kazmarek. Artwork by Nico Hines. You may find this and other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. And you may subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I am Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening.